Before we get, people find you on social media.
Sure. I'm Sam Eastman, and that's why I drink. That's how I open all my shows. I'm currently sort of a singer-songwriter type. I've gone through some genre evolution in recent years. I spend most of my like kind of coming up years playing mostly kind of jazzy type stuff, a lot of improvised music and things of that nature. But the music for which I'm currently promoting is very very folk and country influenced, very lyrical. And you know, if you're a fan of such artists as you know, Joni Mitchell or more obscure acts perhaps as Chris Smither, you'll probably like it. And yeah, you know, I'm primarily a guitarist, but you know, as a result, I'm also diving into the singing as well. And you can find me on Instagram at EastieOfficial. You can find all other things I'm involved with at sameastman.com, my personal domain. And, you know, music's on Spotify. It's also on Bandcamp, which I like to promote. I like to put everything I do on Bandcamp, you know, give the people a chance to do some direct support if they so wish. And that's pretty much it. I put out a single in November, and I've got an album coming out in January that's currently being treated with the finishing touches. So that's about all I can say on that.
All right. Awesome intro. And how about you hit us with your first song?
Of course. Yeah, this is an older tune of mine that I typically open up my sets with. It's an instrumental number that I entitled The Darkness, originally known as Advanced Darkness. So here it is. Thank you. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. And let's see. I know I can't hear myself. There we go. Oh, so much better.
Much better.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I think you could probably hear me fine, right?
I've been able to hear
okay.
you. Yes.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Oh. Anyway. So how long have you been playing guitar?
Oh man. About 17 years. I started when I was 10, currently 27. Mm-hmm. You know, it was definitely more of a, like, I mean, you know, I mean, what kid really sees, like, you know, professional potential at that age? You know, of course, when I first started, it was really just something that was, like, fun and that I was passionate about and all that, and I just, like, spent so much time doing. And then, you know, by the time I was a teenager, I realized, like, oh, okay, like, I could really, like, do something with this. I could really, like, you know, write material and, like, kind of capitalize on, like, kind of having an image and, like, you know, be an artist and all that stuff. So that was when things really started, like, getting kicked into high gear. That was when, like, you know, I was really starting to try to find my voice on the guitar and all that. And then, you know, it got as far as me, like, going to music school, you know, jazz school up in Montreal for 4 years. And then since then, you know, I've moved back home. You know, I'm from this area originally, and I've just been, you know, again, just plugging away ever more at, you know, trying to make stuff that feels honest and that hopefully, you know, connects with people and all that. So yeah, that's pretty much it, I guess.
For sure. Was there a specific moment that you could think of that kind of brought you to that moment of, oh yeah, this is something that I could really do?
I don't know in particular. I just, you know, I just have always had, like, really intense connections with music that I like, and there have been, like, artists that I've discovered kind of peppered throughout my life that have really just, you know, kind of hypnotized me into, like, thinking, like, oh, like, this is what I gotta do. Like, in the beginning, it was, like, Leo Kottke, Michael Hedges, people of those natures who were, like, kind of these solo acoustic specialists who use a lot of alternate tunings and do, like, a lot of really interesting harmony that you know, as a kid and as a teenager, you really can't even wrap your head around for the most part, but, like, it's just so, like, spellbinding. And, yeah, it's just, like, I'm so, like, I didn't even really listen to lyrics for the longest time. I was just always somebody who was very attracted to, like, the kind of mechanics of music and harmony and chords and, like, weird, like, progressions and things like that. So I really can't explain it any better than just, like, the music itself kind of drew me to kind of throw my own hat into the ring, so to speak.
For sure. And, you know, it sounds like you're listening to some pretty cool music. Are there any bands in particular that that come to mind when you're thinking about that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's, you know, to kind of get away from the esoteric stuff. The one thing that you and I have actually had a brief conversation about in the past is the band Fountains of Wayne, mm-hmm. who are huge for me in the recent years, in the years that I've kind of turned more towards being a lyricist as well as a composer. Because, you know, the songwriting duo that they had, Chris Collingwood and Adam Schlesinger, just the most genius lyrics you've ever heard, like, just really relatable subjects. Every song is kind of tinged with a little kind of snark to it. You know, I maybe that's not the right word, but it's like just kind of like this little bit of sense of humor. Like, certain lyrics roll by and like the way that they're said, you can kind of hear, like, the eyes rolling, like, as they're being said, you know. And yeah, just that's a huge band for me personally. And other than that, big Canadian group by the name of The Tragically Hip. They're definitely a big influence kind of on my more recent work as well. As far as, like, more kind of big picture influences, love Bill Frisell. Love a lot of jazz guitar players. Bill Frisell, Pat Metheny, guys like that. Those were the guys who really got me excited about, like, the composing end of things and the harmony end of things. And then, yeah, more recently, you know, pretty much anybody who's, like, a good singer-songwriter has kind of come my way in the lyrics department. So that's about all I can narrow it down to without, you know, tangenting on for hours. So.
Hey, what else would college radio be for? It's for, sure. It's for tangents. Made for it, in fact, some might say. Do you want to play another song for us?
I would love to play another
Sweet.
Song. So back a few weeks ago in November, when I was originally slated to play this show but couldn't, which is a subject we can get into later, I had just come out with a new tune entitled I Told You So, which, if you've seen me live in the past 3 years, you probably know very well. But if you didn't, then you probably only heard it for the first time on November 15th. And I'm going to play that for you all now. And it's going to require a little bit of singing, so bear with me. Mm-hmm. down the track and I'm watching it go. The sound of the engine is fading fast on its way to New Mexico. And if you ain't coming back, well, don't let me know, 'cause I don't wanna say I told you so. We started somewhere soft and low, an easier time. This neighborhood is all we know, but your world's a little bigger than mine. Maybe I'm just not your speed, but honey, we'll never know. And I won't get to say I told you so. Maybe it was good the way it used to be, but could it just ain't good enough when you got no use for me? I can say that life goes on if we gotta go our separate ways. Just please don't make me say is packed, the tank is full. Are you ready to go? The desert roads are calling us, but they just don't feel like home. And I know you ain't coming back, so honey, I'm letting you go. And if you miss me, well, I told you so.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right. If your music had a spirit animal, what would it be?
Oh, man.
And why?
Well, anybody who knows me knows I'm a huge cat person. But for the longest time, I was like enraptured by hedgehogs. And that all goes back to this like Hungarian folktale that my mom had an adaptation of on VHS when I was a kid. And it was a story of this hedgehog who saves these wayward souls from being lost in the forest, and then at the end of the story, it's like his good deeds are repaid, and then he turns into a beautiful prince and marries the farmer's daughter or something like that. And I'm kind of getting away from the point, but basically, like, as a result of feeling such a deep connection to that story, I've always associated the whole idea of like spirit animal with being something of or relating to a hedgehog.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Do you know the Hedgehog's song by the Incredible String Band?
Oh God, I don't. It sounds like something I would like.
Well, there you go. Let's see. I've got a couple of silly-ish, newish questions.
Lay them on me.
What's the most ridiculous thing that you've Googled recently?
The most ridiculous thing that I've Googled recently.
I know soon it's going to be the Hedgehog song.
Soon it's going to be the Hedgehog song by the Incredible String Band.
Yes.
Oh, man. It's like right on the tip of my tongue. I definitely Googled something heinous not too long ago. I mean, my coworker has been like working around the clock to like get me into crypto. So I've been Googling things like, should I buy the GigaChad coin? Should I buy this like silly thing? So it would probably be that, for the sake of not letting it drag on too much.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. Those meme coins, they're pretty silly.
Yep.
And so other than browsing for the new meme coin of the year, to send you right to the moon, when you're not working on music, what else do you like to do for fun?
Oh, man. I'm a pretty singular-minded guy. Music takes up a lot of what I do. And I also work at a guitar store. Music go around in Natick, if you're interested. I love to, you know, read, watch movies. I'm definitely a film buff. I would definitely put that pretty high on my list of hobbies.
Do you have any favorites?
My favorite movie of all time is Sea of Love. And I love, you know, Dark City, That Thing You Do, anything to do with like kind of like obscure sci-fi or like, you know, music movies, that kind of thing. And I also love like B movies and weird like kind of trauma type stuff as well, like anything with like weird special effects and that kind of thing. So yeah, I guess I would say that's kind of my second love to music is like the film buff stuff.
Fantastic. And a question that I like to ask sometimes is, if you could remake the soundtrack for any movie, what would you choose?
Well, I believe it or not, I've actually answered this question before on this show as a member of the group Edward Glenn. And fittingly enough, Sea of Love was my answer to that question.
Well, there you go.
But, you know, at this point in time, I might change the answer to like Good Will Hunting or something like that.
I think when he wasn't working on Fountains of Wayne, I think Adam Schlesinger did soundtracks
as
well.
And he wrote the title track of That Thing You Do, which is one of my favorite films. And it's been one of my favorite films since before I even really knew Fountains of Wayne. But it's no surprise then that that is also one of my favorite movie songs, you know? Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah, there you go. Very talented musician. Yeah. Real shame he passed away right at the beginning of COVID.
I know. I was heartbroken. Awful.
Did you ever get to see them live?
No, that's why we talked about them. I remember because I posted one of those like fill in the blank things on my Instagram story, and one of the questions was like an artist you wish you had gotten to see live, and I put Fountains of Wayne. And I mean, there's tons of artists I wish I could have seen live, of course, but like at that point in time, I was really feeling the Fountains of Wayne, and then you replied and you were like, oh my God, like. I saw Fountains of Wayne like right before they broke up, and I'm sure you can fill that in for the.
Oh yeah, I mean, well, I saw them in. I must have been in high school. It's probably like 2014-ish.
Yeah. I think they broke up in 2012. So I would think.
Did
it would,
they?
Yeah. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was 2014. But
when did their last album come out?
It was 10 or 11 or something like that.
Oh, well, maybe they broke up. Maybe it might have been even earlier. 2012. It's probably like. I don't know, a freshman year of high school for me. Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, the coolest part was watching their guitarist play the feedback on the amplifier like an instrument.
Yeah, yep.
Total master. It was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For the band that most people just know as that band that did Stacey's Mom, like they've got a lot more going under the hood. For those
so
listening,
talented.
if you're uninitiated on Fountains of Wayne, like after this show is over, go listen to every Fountains of Wayne album if you have the time.
Do you have a favorite Fountains of Wayne album if you have
one? Oh my God, the tough questions. I think I gotta say that it's Welcome Interstate Managers, even though it's the big one. Like it just has like hit after hit after hit.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they only have five albums, like they're all pretty dang good. But yeah, I'm pretty partial to Welcome Interstate Managers.
I agree. But yeah, they are all good. Their first album has a lot of bangers on there.
Yep. More grungy for the folks who are more into the kind of 90s rock, you know.
Yep. Sweet. Do you have a favorite concert that you have been to?
I have a few. Recent ones that come to mind. I mean, the first time I saw Bill Frisell, who I mentioned as one of my influences earlier, like that was an incredible show. Like it covered so much ground. Like he was going from like kind of country jazz to bebop to like he did a cover of Wichita Lineman, which at the time was like one of my favorite songs. So I was like, oh my God, he's playing Wichita Lineman. Oh. Of course, you know, he was just on fire as usual. I saw me and my buddy Michael, who's also my drummer slash occasional mandolin player. We went up to Montreal a couple months ago, and we saw a Canadian singer by the name of Harry Manx, and he put on a fabulous show. And that I'd say is probably my most recent favorite because I'm struggling to remember anything else. You know, I try to only go to good shows. You know, so
who has time for bad ones?
Right.
Yeah, but then again, I think most shows are what you make of them.
Right. That is certainly true. But every now and then, you accidentally walk in on a stinker.
Yeah. Oh, too true.
Yeah.
Well, would you like to play not a stinker? Would you like to play another song?
Oh, well, hey, no promises, but I would love to play another song.
Excellent.
Pardon my sniffling and voice cracks, by the way. I'm just getting over a little cold or something of the nature, but I'm on the up and up, so feeling grateful for that at least.
Happy to hear it, and luckily your cat is also on the up and
yes,
up.
Yes, for those who are followers of mine, you know that I had to drop out of playing this show a few weeks ago because my cat Celeste ate a piece of styrofoam and had to be rushed to the emergency room. But luckily, you know, the surgery was great and she recovered really well. She's back to all her old tricks. So if you know me, then I'm sure that's good news for you. But if you don't know me, you should follow your friend Celeste on Instagram to get all the cat-related updates. But anyway, yes. No, yeah, Celeste is doing well, and for that I'm grateful. And this next song I'm going to do to get off that topic entirely, this is a new piece of mine called Hit the Deck, which is kind of a fan favorite of a lot of people who have come to my shows, not to toot my own horn or anything like that, but the reception is positive. And it's been kind of erroneously described by some of my colleagues as being a breakup song, which it isn't. You know, the inspiration was more from just kind of like the moment when you realize you're in a rut and you kind of get yourself out of it and you realize you'd been kind of misusing your time and all that. But, you know, to the credit of the people who do say that, I did kind of frame it as an interaction between two people who are like kind of like having a falling out and all that, because I felt it would make it more relatable. And, you know, who hasn't had an experience like that? So I guess in a way, maybe they're kind of right, but I don't know. I'm just kind of being stubborn and saying that it isn't. So why don't you listen to it and decide for yourself? This is a little piece called Hit the Deck. Do you think of the day when it all went to hell? Found ourselves star-crossed again. You twisted the knife when your eyes they did tell this was over before it began. Armed with your charms, alibis locked and loaded, when you shut the door and left behind the key. They say separation makes the heart grow devoted, but in your case, I guess not for me. So I need you like a submarine needs a screen door, like a deer in the headlights needs to come back for more. You don't remember, but I can't forget. Your second chance is my first regret. Your second chance is my first regret. Time marches on, yet I'm putting out your fire. Why am I even surprised? Hope my replacement gives you all you desire and falls for your clever disguise. This old house can't seem to shake your memory, so I'm heading north, the last place you'd expect. But there's a storm coming down over Rovaniemi, so batten down the hatches and hit the deck. So I need you like a submarine needs a screen door, like a deer in the headlights needs to come back for more. You don't remember, but I can't forget. Your second chance is my first regret. An Alfa Romeo needs a check engine light. I'm taking the wheel and now my course is set. Your second chance is my last regret.
second chance is my last regret. So I need you like a I need you like a submarine needs a screen though. Like a deer in the headlights needs to come back for more. You don't remember, but I can't forget. Your second chance is my last regret. Your second chance is my last regret.
I could see why people would think that's a breakup song.
You know, as I was singing it, I was like, am I just lying to myself about the origins here? But no, I mean, you know, it's complicated like a lot of things in life. And I remember as I was writing it, like, I was like fighting the urge to like use like certain turns of phrase and all that. But I was just like, no, you know, it just sounds better that way, you know. So I think whether I like it or not, maybe my friends are right, you know.
And that song definitely has a Fountains of Wayne feel.
Yeah. I do credit them with a lot of the kind of attitude and angle that I employ in that tune for sure. So, you know, there's my influences at work, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And it still very much sounds you and different.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yes. If you could wake up tomorrow with the ability to play any instrument, what instrument would you choose? And if you answered this when you were here with Edward Glenn.
I did answer this with Edward Glenn. And I think the answer is still true, which is the Mohan Veena, which is kind of an esoteric Indian instrument that kind of falls between like a slide guitar and a sitar kind of type thing. Cool. But if I could amend that answer, I would probably say like some kind of horn or woodwind, like a trombone or something like that. You know, I you know what? Actually, my definitive answer, a saxophone. I went to the Newport Jazz Festival over the summer, and I had just a copious amount of what I would call saxophone envy, like the ability to just like blow really hard into the horn and like have that kind of woody like distortion that kind of comes out of it and all that. I was like, man, why can't I do that, you know?
The really cool thing is a lot of that actually comes from overtones within your own mouth.
Yeah.
When you get to that level, which is just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I've been playing sax for years, and I've recently been trying to learn how to growl into it, which is how you get that, like,
yeah.
It's tricky, but it's a fun instrument.
Surely.
Yeah. What did you dress up as for Halloween this year?
This is a little niche. I'll preface this by asking if you've seen the documentary series Chimp Crazy on HBO.
I have not.
Okay, so hopefully some of you listening at home have seen this. It's the follow-up to Tiger King. So it's by the same director. It's about this, it's like similar premise. It's about this woman in Missouri who, you know, collects, quote unquote, really hoards like these exotic chimps. And just kind of keeps them around for like her own kind of selfish interests, and like the living conditions aren't really like quite up to code. So it's a documentary about like her fight to like claim that she's like the rightful owner of the chimps. And then it's her against PETA basically, who are trying to take the chimps away from her. And how does this relate to my Halloween costume, you may ask? Well, my girlfriend and I decided to do a couple's costume where she dresses up as the chimp collecting woman who has a very distinctive look. Her name's Tanya Haddix, I believe. And she's like, you know, she's clearly had a lot of work done, a lot of plastic surgery, like blonde wigs, pink sweatsuits, that kind of thing. So my girlfriend dressed up as that with the pink sweatsuit and the blonde wig and all that. And I was the chimp. I was the lawsuit embroiling chimp whose name is Tonka. So if you haven't seen Chimp Crazy, I recommend it. It's a pretty entertaining watch, and it'll definitely help you understand why we did that as our Halloween costumes.
I'm going to look it up right now.
Sure.
Let's see. What was it called?
Chimp Crazy.
Chimp Crazy.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's great. That's,
Yeah. The promo poster is crazy with her, like, kind of, like...
Yeah.
Laying down back against the chimp background. Yeah.
If anyone's watching on Instagram Live, I'm tilting the monitor towards towards it. That's pretty crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. And if you're not and you want to be, you can find me at Mellow Max Radio on Instagram. I'm here with Eastie Official, Sam Eastman.
Mm-hmm.
And If anyone missed it at the beginning, Sam, you have a new album coming out.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know if I mentioned that yet. I mentioned the single.
I mentioned the single.
Okay. I don't even know why I nitpicked about that. I apologize. But yeah, the single came out in November. That was I Told You So. And then the album's coming out in January. I'm not going to say a date yet because it still hasn't even been mastered yet. I'm hoping for January 15th because that's the date of my next show at the Midway Cafe with my fabulous band. But no, the album's going to be called It Was Really Nothing. And it's going to be a short album, but it's going to be comprised of the single and Hit the Deck and other similar pieces. And as I mentioned in the beginning, it's going to be kind of my foray into more of like a singer-songwriter-y type territory. So if you have any of my previous music, if you have it saved in your Spotify or anything like that, it's not the same brand of like western-y jazz that you're used to. It's a little more accessible. So I kind of hate that term, you know, accessible, but like I think it does make sense, you know.
Yeah, it's important to make music that people like, but it's also important to make music that not everyone will like.
Like on the one hand, I feel like it's not necessarily productive to describe kind of more esoteric types of music as being like inaccessible, you know, like only certain people will like this, you know. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's not all the fault of the gatekeepers. Like, you know, you put on like John Zorn for like, you know, your average layperson in a cafe, you know, they probably won't enjoy it for reasons other than, you know, they haven't read the right books or whatever, you know, like mm-hmm.
For sure. Do you have a favorite memory from recording that upcoming album?
Well, you know, the whole process has been good. You know, it's gone a little longer than I would have hoped. And that's really my fault. You know, it's been years since I've had to like lead my own kind of enterprise, and I've kind of, and with COVID and everything like that, I've realized that I've kind of forgotten how to like be the leader of the pack in a certain way. But you know, the whole recording process was great. We did it with Alistair from the group Hush Club at his little home studio setup, and that was a real fun time. And I'm having Nate Scaringi, who plays bass in the band Clifford, to doing all the mixing and production and all that, and you know, going back and forth with them has been great. Like I've appreciated everybody's input who's worked on it. And, you know, anything to do with my bandmates, Mike, who I mentioned earlier, and Harley Spring, who plays bass for me, just such a, you know, it's always a good time working with those lads, whether we're playing out or playing in the studio. And so, you know, the whole making process over the past year of It Was Really Nothing, I would say, has been a positive memory.
That's great. Always good to hear that. And I think that when a band has fun recording an album, you can really hear it.
Yeah, well, I hope that comes through, because we definitely did.
Good. Well, on that, do you want to play another song for
us? Yeah, I'll go back to the instrumental route here, because there are still a couple of instrumental tunes on the album, even though it's more vocally focused. This is actually one that goes back a few years. This was the last song I ever wrote when I lived in Montreal, and my last days there coincided with the beginning of COVID, so like just complete pandemonium, like nobody knew what was going to happen, and I was like trapped in my apartment in a foreign country of which I was not a citizen, and my apartment didn't have air conditioning or anything like that, so I was just trapped in like this steaming apartment and just not getting enough sleep every night. And on one of my last nights there before I ultimately escaped, which is I feel like I keep saying this is the kind of a story in its own right. I just kind of in a fever dream, like kind of came up with this little melody that kind of grew into a song. And for a while I was calling it Tane Sine, which is Finnish for From Here to There. But now I'm going back to the original title that I put on the demo, which is Out of Here on the First Thing Smoking. So here's that. And thank you for dealing with all my diatribes before I played the song. So here's Out of Here. Thank you.
Lovely.
Thank
lovely,
you.
Lovely.
Thank
I hear you. The COVID angst in there.
Yeah, you know, hey, whether you like it or not, it's in there.
Yeah. You're a superhero, but your power is really bad. What is it?
Oh, man. The ability to turn invisible only when no one is looking.
Ah, perfect. Perfect. That's a good one. do you collect anything?
Well, you know, like a lot of musicians, I have a perhaps unhealthy amount of guitars. but other than that, you know, I'm a sucker for, like, anytime I see, like, a little, like, Pokemon figurine or, like, a little, like, you know, Nintendo-related figurine or something like that, I'm like, I have to have it, you know. Like, and luckily I've kind of quelled my obsession with that a little bit, although, I shouldn't say that it's a good thing necessarily to do that because, you know, if you like something, like, you know, by all means, you know, do it. But when it gets to the point of just, like, having a lot of random crap, which is the point that I'm at, it definitely becomes a bit of an issue. But, yeah, I think other than, like, music-related equipment, I would say I'm a sucker for, like, little, like, action figures and video game-related memorabilia and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. I know the feeling. If any more pieces of junk enter my apartment, it's going to sink.
Yep. Yeah.
So as a collector of instruments, are there any instruments or pieces of equipment that have sort of changed your approach to music?
Well, this guitar that I'm playing now, this is my Eastman, fittingly named, actually. this is the greatest guitar I've ever owned. Like, I picked this up in a guitar store in Ithaca, New York. I was there visiting an old girlfriend of mine, and, like, I wasn't even intending to come back from there with a guitar, but I you know, she showed me this guitar store out there, and she was like, "Oh, you gotta check it out." And I was like, oh, "Okay, cool." And I remember picking this thing up off the wall, just kind of like thinking, like, "Oh, haha, you know, Eastman guitars, whatever." Like, that's funny. And then I actually started playing it, and I was like, "Holy crap! Like, this thing is cool." And I don't know how much it necessarily, like, changed the way I play or my approach, but it was the first time that I ever had an acoustic guitar that really sounded like the way it does in my head. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I've had guitars that I've been crazy about over the years, and, like, when you're a kid, like, you know, when you get your first guitar, like, you're like, oh my god, this thing is awesome. But then, like, since I had kind of matured as a musician, and I'd, like, had reference points for, like, oh, well, you know, Chris Smithers' guitar sounds like this, or, like, you know, Leo Kottke's guitar sounds like this, or whatever. Like, you know, I was going to guitar stores every now and then and playing, like, you know, Gibsons, Taylors, Martins, that kind of thing, and I never found anything that really sounded like my mind's ear, you know, until the fateful day in Ithaca when I came across the Eastman that I'm currently playing, and from there it was just, you know, Till death do us part. So maybe not an answer to your question so much, but like this is the guitar that has allowed me to like hear things accurately enough to the way that they come into my head that it kind of like bucks the mental blocking of like, oh, like, yeah. If any artist has gotten to the point where they're like, well, maybe I can finish this song if I just like had a different kind of chorus pedal, or if I had like a different kind of this or that or whatever, like, not like you just need a good guitar and this is it.
Mm-hmm. And it, I will say it does sound fantastic.
Thank you. Oh, and yeah, uh-huh. Sure does. Yeah.
And it's very fitting that it is an Eastman. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, kind of a match made in heaven, yeah. Honestly.
Yeah. Where do you go to find new music?
New music kind of finds me. I'm pretty bad at like being deliberate in my finding of new music. You know, I'll hear something on accident. Like, I was watching an interview with Ariel Posen when I was in college, who's like a big modern guitar player, like kind of slide, kind of bluesy kind of stuff. And he just randomly said, like, oh yeah, like I really like this Canadian guitarist named Kevin Bright. And I was like, okay, like I'll check that out. And now Kevin Bright's one of my favorite artists. So like, you know, I'll hear certain things come up in Spotify playlists and I'll just Shazam it. Like, you know, I'm so ready with my Shazam and all that. And, you know, I guess one answer to the question would be kind of hearing it in the wild, you know, like hearing it in like, you know, I'll be out walking around and I'll hear something on the sound system or whatever. And I'll be like, I got to figure out what this is, you know? But yeah, other than that, it's kind of just circumstance, not only circumstance, but also kind of circling back around and like rediscovering things that I kind of wrote off, you know, mm-hmm. Like one artist that I'm really into right now is Tom Waits. And I've always loved Tom Waits. I would never say that I really wrote him off per se, but I never knew, for example, that he had a concert movie that came out in 1988 called Big Time, which I just saw at the Brattle Theater last Saturday night. And now I just can't stop listening to the soundtrack. I'm like, oh my God, how did I go so long without knowing about Big Time, you know? So yeah, all that just to say, I think new music kind of finds me.
You know, it's a good way to do it. Would you like to play another song for us?
Yeah, sure.
Sweet.
I think I'll throw caution to the wind and try to play that Randy Travis tune I was talking about earlier. I'm already feeling a little bit adventurous considering I played Hit the Deck with an unaccompanied guitar solo, so, you know, what the hell. Yeah, that's the other thing, too, is that I used to play solo all the time, and now I don't do it very often. So I'm kind of used to having my bandmates kind of fill certain things out. So what you're hearing now, like, if you don't know what's coming, well, neither do I, because I'm kind of just trying stuff. So on the upcoming album is a little tune by the name of The Simple Things, which is written by Randy Travis. Not just written by Randy Travis, but written for the specific purpose of being for the show Hey Arnold. If there are any Hey Arnold fans out there listening tonight, the story goes that he liked the show so much that he was like, I want to write a song for that. And so he did, and it became The Simple Things. And the premise of the episode is Arnold's neighbor, Mr. Wynn, he overhears him singing in the shower one day, and it turns out he's just got this beautiful voice for singing country songs. And it turns into this whole thing where he, like, you know, becomes like a viral sensation and all that. And then when he finally gets up in the Grand Ole Opry to play a song, he's like, I don't want to be famous. Like, this is the last time I'm ever going to play this song. But it's a wonderful song, so I think it ought to be heard. And here it is, The Simple Things. And one, two, three. You can offer me a diamond-plated pearl. You can send me all the riches in the world. You can tempt me with the palaces of kings. I'd give them back in a big old sack and keep the simple things. I've got the simple things. I've got the rain and spring. Got spicy chicken wings and french fried onion rings. So line me up a mile of limousine. For me, it don't add up to a hill of beans. I've got no hankering for grabbing your brass ring. It's crystal clear, I'll stay right here and keep the simple things. I've got the summer breeze, 16 cans of peas, a two-speed window fan when it's 93 degrees. So forgive me for not grabbing your brass ring. It's crystal clear, I'll stay right here and keep the simple things. It's crystal clear, I'll stay right here and keep the simple things. There it is.
Very nice.
A little short one for you.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite gig that you've played?
Me and my drummer slash mandolinist, Michael, recently did a gig at State Park that was awesome. And it was kind of awesome in spite of itself. I mean, the gig was awesome. Like, the other bands were great. But we were struck with a bit of last-minute adversity when our bassist, Harley, had a random emergency foot injury that prevented them from being with us. And, you know, I never had a doubt that we could still, like, play the gig as a duo, you know? But it was just really a relief to actually be there playing it and, like, having it go so well, which ultimately made it all the more satisfying. And, you know, this is probably old news at this point, but, like, the first big gig that I ever did with those guys was when we played at the Burn last year. And, you know, it's been, like, over a year since that happened. We've played a ton of great gigs since then. But, like, that was like, my first time, like, really bringing my solo project back to a big audience in a long time. And so, you know, I still reminisce about it from time to time, for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's great. The Burn is a great
it was perfect. Yeah. Like, everything about it was perfect. So it's kind of the high watermark that I use to rank mm-hmm. a lot of the following shows too. And thankfully a lot of them meet the precedent, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, there's a band that we both follow on Instagram, which does not have very many followers, and their first big public show was at the Burren.
Mm.
I'm talking about World Federal Organization Club.
World Federal Organization Club. What a band. Mm. What a band. Mm.
That was right before COVID. So
yep.
you were out of town.
Yeah, I was still in Canada back then. But you know, I saw the videos, I saw the mm-hmm. The advertisements and all that. It was good stuff. Good stuff.
Yep. Yep. Good old Tufts band from 2020.
Yes.
And yeah, in 2019. That's yeah. If you're looking for good local music, check them out.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. How was your Spotify Wrapped this year? Any surprises? Do you use Spotify?
Well, I switched to Apple Music this year, kind of halfway through the year, so I didn't end up looking at my Spotify Wrapped. I didn't end up looking at my Spotify Wrapped. My Spotify Wrapped for artists was all out of whack because I put out the single in November. And even though the Spotify Wrapped doesn't come out until like the first week of December, it's still like only calculated stats from like all the stuff that I'd put out before the single. So I was like, well, damn, like, I guess I'll just not post this then. But no, if I had to kind of make a mental Spotify Wrapped for the year.
Or your Apple Wrapped. I
didn't know they did that. I didn't look at it.
the format looks pretty cool now.
Yeah, that's
about,
awesome.
Maybe I'll jump ship.
No, this year, you know, as with the past several years, my number one artist was probably Ry Cooder. For those who don't know, he's kind of like a eccentric, like, folk musician who does like a lot of like mixed genres and all that, and he's kind of the reason why I do like a lot of the kind of old-timey country type stuff that I do, because he kind of tricked me into liking a lot of 100-year-old songs, because I would listen to his albums and I didn't realize that like 9 out of 10 songs would be covers of like, you know, Blind Lemon Jefferson or like, you know, turn of the century blues musicians. So after a certain point I realized like, oh, I don't, it's not that I like Ry Cooder songs, I like freaking like old blues songs, you know. So he's typically like my top artist the past few years. And then behind him is probably like, you know, Chicano Batman and like a lot of kind of Latin type stuff, like Buena Vista Social Club and Mark Rebo y Los Cubanos Postizos. And I'm having trouble remembering all the ones, mm-hmm. but you know, I'm making this up as I go, so I should probably just leave it at that.
You've named plenty of great musicians during the show, so don't worry.
Right on.
Do you have a favorite song of yours to perform?
I mean, I love playing Hit the Deck, the second to last song I just did, because as I mentioned, like it clearly seems to like connect with people and kind of get them like engaging with the music. But prior to that, and for most of my playing career, I have a tune called Waltz for Bill, which is typically my favorite to play live, because it's one of those songs that I wrote, and then like after some time passed after I wrote it, I was like, oh my god, like I can't believe that I actually came up with that. Like, am I like actually more skilled than I realize, you know? Not, you know, I hate when people do the self-deprecating thing. I'm not gonna lean into that too much. But it really is true, you know, it's like you don't know what you're capable of until you do it, you know? And Waltz for Bill was definitely one of those kind of crowning moments for me. And so every time I play it live, I'm like, hey, you know what? Yeah, I did that.
Nice. And what's your favorite thing about making music?
It just makes sense to me, and like I'm somebody who's very like, I think like a lot of people, perhaps everyone, you know, every person, honestly, it's like we need to feel as though we've done something. You know, we need to feel as though we've made something. And for some people, that's making music and art. And for some people, that's, you know, building homes or like, you know, being like doing some kind of maintenance or something like that. Like, we need to feel as though we are like spending our time doing something that's wise. And music has just always made sense to me. Like, it's just always connected with me, and it's always been like kind of a language that I've understood and all that. So I've just always leaned into it and done it to the fullest extent of my ability. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like music to me is like the biggest possible realization of like the feeling of like having accomplished something, you know, having a finished song, a finished album, you know, a finished piece that expresses something that I'm trying to say. You know, as you can probably tell with all my like stuttering around and like finding words and all that, I've never been that much of an orator. So, you know, I like to let the music speak for me when I'm otherwise, you know, kind of stuttering around.
For sure. Do you have any more songs for us that you'd like to play?
Yeah, I was going on about Waltz for Bill a second ago. I was hoping to play that before the end of
Perfect.
The show. So
yeah, I think we've got time for one more.
Yeah, it does require a little bit of tuning. So if there's any, you know, further questions, I guess now would be a good time to ask.
For sure. Let's see. About the Boston music scene, are there any bands that you're keeping an eye on?
That's a really good question. I don't want to say no, because there definitely are, but I'm lucky to say that a lot of people that I'm close with are like already doing pretty well. Like I mentioned, like my friend Alistair from Hush Club, like who did the recording of the album and all that. Like, I've been seeing on Instagram, those guys have been doing like crazy big gigs, like out of state and stuff like that, and getting a lot of recognition, which is awesome. So, you know, same is true of like my buddy, Brady Dallas Jones. Like, he has written a lot of songs that I've really, enjoyed. And, speaking of him, I hope he's still listening. Nick Prado as well. He told me he'd be tuning in. I checked out some of his recent stuff and just really fell in love with it too.
And he will also be playing in that very chair next week.
That's awesome. That's yes. Great. Yeah, I saw both him and Brady in the band of Nora Meyer. And not only did I see them, we actually played together. And Nora's stuff is great too. So all those guys, like, you know, the Boston music scene's in a really good place right now. I think if you just, you know, just toss a rock and you'll find a good band. So.
Oh yeah, and I believe Nora's going to be playing synth with Nick next week.
Makes sense. Yeah. That's awesome.
So now that I know that he's listening, I'll have to really, really refresh my questions.
Well, not necessarily. It's... You know, it's his perspective will probably be a lot different than mine. You know.
Oh sure, but I hate making having my guests be able to prepare. It's, you know, spoilers.
True.
Yeah. No, it's good. Some degree of thinking on the air, some degree of premeditated. It's a good mix.
Yeah, honestly, the only reason I remembered the ones from the Edward Glenn interview was just cuz I'm like obscenely like just the ability to remember minutia in my mind for some reason is like just ironclad. Like I can't remember, like I'll go to the grocery store and like not remember what I needed to buy, but then like, you know, if I need to say who was like the extra in like some random like trauma movie from like 1991 or whatever, like I'll be able to tell you within like 5 seconds.
In that case, you might have a good answer for this one. Do you have any favorite quotes? And if that's just not one of the things that sticks, that's A-OK.
I don't know who originally said this, but I've really been liking lately, don't just do something, stand there. I think that's one of those things that goes back like hundreds of years, you know, to like Mark Twain or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds like that almost sounds like Groucho Marx.
Yeah, actually it does. Or like Yogi Berra or something like that.
Yep. One of those things that just mean nothing, which is great.
But at the same time means everything.
So
you
much,
know?
So much, yeah.
Well, I'm ready to play here if you're ready to hear it. So here's Waltz for Bill, which, again, going back to Bill Frisell, this was a piece that was very much inspired by him, and I was just obsessed with him in college, so it was all I could think about, you know, when I was writing this. So I'll spare you the long speech, as the other songs have gotten. That's about all you need to know about this one, so I hope you enjoy. Thank you.
thank you very much for coming in, and thank you for playing some excellent music.
Thank you for having me.
And would you like to read a PSA?
I would love to, yes.
Excellent.
In the 21st century, when our things break, it's typical to just toss them out into the trash for the landfill and buy replacements. But that can actually waste money and time, as well as harming the environment. A simple sewing kit can cost less than a pair of socks. Mending holes in clothes with a needle and thread can often take just a few minutes, less time than browsing the web to spend money on buying new ones. While some electronic devices are purposefully manufactured to be impossible to repair, websites like iFixit.com publish high-quality detailed repair guides for free. If one of your electronic devices malfunctions before responsibly disposing of it as e-waste, first track down the owner's manual and see if it has a reset procedure. Often enough, that will do the trick. So when something of yours breaks, considering trying to fix it, save you